I don't know. It is like a rage. It is like a rage. I do get angry. I'm pissed off with the world. There's a lot of things I dislike with the world. I think there's a lot of shit people in it. And if I'm trying to do a set that's going to be unimaginably crazy and strong, then I will think about all the things in the world that need to fucking change. Because, like, if I'm honest with you, it upsets me that the world, in my eyes, is a dying place. It's a place that's polluted to shit. It's a place that... There's a lot of negative, put it that way. And I could really rein in on that and picture the darkest future for mankind and fucking draw something out in the gym that will just create an energy that you just can't comprehend. But I choose to try and stay away from that, because when I do go into that place, if I do go into that dark place, it's so strong and so powerful that even when I leave the gym, I'll have a cloud over me for days. Advices Radio
Network. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 16 of It's Just Bodybuilding with your co-host Dusty Hanshaw and myself, Big Ron Partlow. And today on our show, we've got one of our favorite British friends on, James Hollingshead, on It's Just Bodybuilding. Dusty, how you doing, man?
Living the dream. I think I've got Harvey contained for at least an hour right now with the bone.
Yes, yes. You got to give him some. You give him some rawhide, or you give him like an antler.
It's a get. Well, I go to AJ's, and they actually have these bones that they take the meat off of. They just saw them in half.
Right,
these little chunks for them. So I'm hoping. 12 weeks old is a lot different than 10 weeks, apparently.
Yeah.
He's got shit to do all day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's chewing on computer cords, you know, trying to wreck your shit.
I'm just grateful it was just the cord. I was like, $20. That's not too painful.
There you go.
The plug itself is $100. That would have pissed me off a little bit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're all good, but he can't reach that shit. It's too high.
Well, we got a good one today. We got James Hollingshead waiting in the wings.
Let's bring him on quickly.
I already got some good questions for him. So let's bring James on.
Have we told James it's a 3-hour episode based on the questions alone? Did you happen to cook another meal yet, James?
Yeah. I hope he's got one next to him ready to heat up. I'm looking forward to it. We ringing him?
You guys can't see, but Scott did this, which means yes.
Okay.
Honestly, fancy MacBook ready to go.
Is he not picking up? Okay. He's messaging.
You see what's happening here? He's controlling the situation. I like that. He's a fucking control freak. He's literally watching it right now. He's like, fuck you, I decide.
There we go.
Exactly. I'm proud of him. I'll make you guys call at least twice. It's the only way I feel like I'm in control.
Right. I think you just said a lot about yourself, Dusty.
Yeah. Insecurities. Oh, look, there he is, guys. See, there he is. He's just talking about it. He's like, I'm not doing this until I'm good and fucking ready.
that was a little bit of inception there. We're bringing our guest on before he was ready to come on.
Again, I'm in control.
There we go. Yeah, he said he's got his Skype on now. There we go. Oh, he said he had to add it to his phone. Okay. Bring him up. Of course, this will all be edited out.
No, we should leave a good 7 minutes of... It'll become people's favorite part. I mean, I've noticed I have no idea what they're going to like. I mean, they might like this. There he is.
I've just done something. I haven't used my laptop for so long, chaps. So I have got Skype on my laptop, but I can't work it, so I'm on my phone today. Is that okay with you?
It's all good.
I've normally got a nice mic and everything, but I haven't. Yeah.
No worries. You leave the mic there for visual effect.
It looks like I'm professional.
It looks like a professional, and I'm satisfied already because you already used the word chaps.
The show is over.
Talk yeah, to you like later. I just wanted a real good dose of British, you know.
Oh, you'll get that today.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what everyone's excited about because they know that, usually our show tends to get, how would we say, Dusty, a little bit of a hardcore viewer.
Just a little bit.
Yep.
So when we bring on a British person, it tends to add a lot of excitement because they know what that means. They know we're not talking, freaks are different. Yeah, we're not going to be sipping tea with the Queen today.
None of that today, chaps.
No, man. How are you doing, man? How are you feeling looking back on your year and all? I mean, you're back from Japan now. I assume you're kind of done for the year as far as travel and shit, right?
Oh, mate. Honestly, it's been a really busy year, and you kind of only realize how busy you've been when you stop. And I've kind of sat down now and taken a moment to breathe and realized, yeah, I've been everywhere this year, literally. Like this year, I've probably traveled more than I have ever in my life. All thanks to bodybuilding, so I'm not complaining. But no, I'm glad to be home. I'm glad to be settled. I think it was a pretty good year. You know, you can only get so much out of yourself. You can only ask that much of yourself in terms of what you can achieve. And I think I did everything I could have done really within the time frame. So I'm pretty happy. I'm happy to be home. Happy that it's this time of year and, like, you know, Christmas is coming and I can shut it down a little bit and just kind of relax, but obviously still work, but relax in the sense that there's no actual contests because, you know, it is, guys.
It kicks
the shit out of you. So,
how long did you actually, like, prep for? I mean, your span of shows was what?
First show was in April, I think, Spain. And then last show was in November.
Man, oh man. Yeah, so you prepped the whole year?
Pretty much. You know, I came out of prep on the after the British show, thinking that was my last one. And then obviously I started working with Chris. And I was just like, Chris, I've got the bug. Like, come on, let's just diet me down, see if we can do something a bit extreme, regardless of time frames. Let's just fuck about and see what we can do. And he was more than willing because he loves the challenge. If you put him under pressure to try and achieve something, he can't say no. So,
I think that's the only reason he ever worked with me is because I posed a challenge.
Can it be done?
Can it be done? You know.
He certainly likes proving people wrong, doesn't he? He likes to likes people to say it can't be done and then prove that it can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they don't think it can be done on this much gear? Let's do even less.
Oh, exactly. Oh god, yeah, that's exactly what I noticed of him. That's the first thing I noticed, actually. You know, like straight to the point. Like he very tame, very mild, very sensible, and that was actually a nice change as well.
Well, I think the main thing is that when the body's healthier and cleaner, it operates better.
Absolutely. So, you can tell with when you're eating and your digestion and less, you know, your levels of being lethargic are so much less. You know, you actually feel up for doing things. You feel up for walking down the road. Like it's previous preps, you know, you do the gym and then you go home and you just want to stay in the chair all day. And this one, I was kind of like, I felt really fresh. I was just like, I feel like walking, going outside and getting some fresh air and doing the stuff. Like I was far more active in a leisurely way this time around than previous preps. Obviously, I didn't prep for the full prep because I was going to prep all the way into the Japan show. So I did cut the prep 2 weeks short. So I probably would have been on death's door 2 weeks later. But it was still, considering the time frame and, you know, it was relatively good showing and the physique was pretty okay. It weren't bad and I wasn't suffering and I didn't feel too beat up internally. So it was good.
What was your favorite look of the year?
For me, probably my first show when I was freshest, probably the Spain show. I wasn't, it's funny because it wasn't my leanest look, but I looked fresh as hell. And when I compare my physique next to the people I was on stage with, I looked just like I belong there the most in that show.
I know what you mean. You know, who is ahead of you there?
Akim Williams and Joshua Nartwitz.
Yeah.
So, you know, and at that show we had Raphael was at that show, SM Obeyed, you know, there's people that I read the magazines like, and I have been for years, and I was like, wow, Jesus, I'm standing next to these guys, and I had no idea I even looked half as okay as I did. So to get in that top three, I was like, wow, you know, that I could have walked away from the year happy with that.
Right, because you beat guys you beat good guys.
Yeah, and last year, yeah. I struggled in my first two shows, didn't place in neither of them. Then I managed to squeeze into a top six in Prague, and that was like winning the lottery for me. I was just happy to do that. So my goal for this year really was to go from, can I go higher than sixth? And I did it in my first show, so I could have kind of called it a day and just gone back to to chill mode. But, you know, there's the bodybuilder in us loves the it loves the process of dieting and challenging ourselves. So I kind of probably am a bit guilty of doing too many shows, but hey ho, you live once.
Yeah, yeah. So you were gonna do Japan, and then you just decided, it's not worth it.
Japan I was gonna do, but you know, like little things happened this year. You know, mum passing away and stuff like that. There was just things that kind of were at the forefront of my mind and blocking my ability to truly zone in and be the best I could. So if I'm honest, when I come out of Romania with a top five, considering, I was like, wow, actually, I'm counting my blessings here. That was a good finish. And I don't think I can last any longer because mentally, you know, thoughts of mum are stronger than thoughts of progression and winning. So I need to focus in on my personal feelings rather than the goal at hand at the minute. So I spoke to Hide before the show, who was the promoter, and I just told him the situation, and he was so lovely. He said, mate, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So I turned Japan basically into a holiday instead.
Right. Yeah, no, man, it looked like you had fun. I thought maybe you were over there. I thought maybe you went to like support someone or help someone or something. I wasn't quite sure.
It was because I had everything booked, Ron. So I booked the show because I signed ready to do it. I was all good, you know. As soon as I got off the stage in Romania, I had this kind of epiphany, and I knew that I had to kind of switch gear for a minute and pull back.
So let me ask you a question then. Your mum passed away a few months ago, right?
Yeah, August.
So do you feel like you just hadn't really dealt with it yet? Like you were just like, okay, just a few more months and I can deal with this.
Yeah, like it was such a hard time. I moved up to her house and I lived with her while I was caring for her with my sister for the last few weeks. And I just kind of, I was finding myself eating bad food and doing things that normally aren't my kind of way. So I thought to myself, what I need to kind of do is select a show to try and keep myself from doing stupid things. So really the show for me was a way to stop myself from self-sabotaging myself, just to stop me from going into a dark place. It was a distraction. So I just gave myself another contest to do in order to keep me from falling off the rails, if I'm honest.
Right.
Yeah. I think we've all done that one way or another.
Many of us, you know, when something's getting to you, bothering you, what saves you sometimes just avoiding it and going towards the show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Put it on the back burner for a little while. Yeah.
Yep, and then that's why I realized this is the thing you say, that back burner, and that's so right, because it was on the back burner, and then as soon as I stepped off in stage in Rome, it was not on the back burner. It went whoosh, and my emotions came to me there and then, and I started to feel everything that I probably should have felt sooner all at once. So I kind of, it all just came out of nowhere then, and I'm glad I got Romania done, and I was happy. So now I'm supposed to, I'm back training, but I'm also dealing with what happened this year.
Right.
Yeah. So what would be like your next, do you have a show thing for next year? Like, you think it's springtime you're hopping in, or?
It'll be later half of the year. Cause I really, really now, it's like when I was listening to you on the podcast, Dusty, I can't remember if it was actually even this one or another one. It was you talking about how you really fancy doing a really good off season. It was a recent one. And I'm in exactly the same place. Mentally, I've competed so frequently since being an amateur, you know, I haven't had a proper off season, and, you know, I'm not a short guy. I'm 5'11". I'm coming on stage at like 250, 255, probably could be even harder and come in at 245. So that tells me that at my height, I know that I need more muscle to win. I can do well, but to win, I need more muscle. So I'm just being logical, and I just know that I have to go away now and just, do the bit I don't want to do and take some time away from the stage.
Right.
Because I'm just a bit of an addict for dieting for some reason, but I'm looking forward to a solid off season, and I need to get there, put the weight on, stay there, and don't get the bug, because I always get the bug and then I just start dying. So
I'm gonna call Chris and tell him you're not allowed.
I literally need to be told you're not allowed, because then I won't. So right. Yeah, so that's the goal. The goal is just to get nice and heavy and nice and strong and enjoy a little bit of downtime. But I say downtime, is it really downtime? It's just a different kind of time, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's just yeah. a different torture.
Downtime with your 7-plate stiff leg deadlifts.
Well, I need to get back up there. Dusty's the one running the fucking RDL game right now. Everyone's trying to keep up.
You guys got me addicted to those damn things. I wasn't doing them forever, and then Jordan starts sending me some videos, and I'm like,
I think he loves them.
you guys are all just off the deep end of the fucking pool with some of the stiff leg deadlift strength. It's just fucking nuts. So
it's such a great movement. I always undervalued that, did it?
It's always been my favorite deadlift. It's my favorite. It's the deadlift variation that I use the most.
It just does so much. It does so much more for your physique than you think. Like it isn't just a hamstring movement. Your whole posterior chain gets thicker from doing them. And my back looked my best this year at my first show, and that's when I was fresh off a short off season with a lot of RDLs. So, you know, proof's in the pudding, really. It does show you, when you do a certain exercise consistently and progress the muscle, it comes. It really does.
Well, your back is one of the body parts that had the most improvement to it, I thought, over the last year.
Yeah, it really needed. And that's where Jordan, with his exercise kind of choices, was like, you need to do this. So I was like, okay, I'll do that.
Right. So what about the business of James Hollingshead? Like, I know most bodybuilders, Dusty and I included, have kind of multiple income streams. You know, we're doing several different things. You know, what does James Hollingshead do? I know you work with the website.
Yeah. Majority of what I do is obviously with the Train by JP subscription site. But I also founded, obviously, Gym with the Boys. So I get paid to be who I am with the gym. Fortunately, I'm in a nice little position with them, and they're very respectful of me, and vice versa. So as long as the gym's going and it's running and it's smooth and everyone's happy, then obviously I have an income from that as well. I have done coaching in the past, but I don't coach now, because I found that when I really got into the competitive side of bodybuilding myself, I can't give to the client like I want to, because I am selfish. So I would hate to take someone on and then not give them all of me. And that is the truth. I won't, because I'm too hungry to get better myself at the minute. So so the coaching kind of took a knock on the head, but I earn enough from the site and from the gym to kind of do what I love doing. And I'm really lucky to have that. So, obviously thank you to Jordan for everything he's done for me. And thank you to obviously the guys at Kings as well, because not many people can be just a bodybuilder, really. You know how it is, guys, that you've got to do a lot of things to try and afford to do this. And I've just been really fortunate with managing everything up to this point that it's fallen into this particular place. So really, that's why for me now, I don't want to waste the time I have. I want to try and put everything into this bodybuilding for the next few years, because I'm in a position where I have time to do so. Mm-hmm. So really, business of James is quite limited. There's not a lot going on, really, if I'm honest. I'm literally quite a boring person.
I think we all are. As a good bodybuilder should be, you know, as any good bodybuilder should be.
Yeah, I've done, you know, I've done 9-to-5s and I've worked like that, and I was always, God, shit at them. I was never good at taking orders. So I was never good at, you know, following anyone's, so if someone wanted to show me how to do something, I just couldn't. I don't know if it's because I didn't want to give them the respect of showing me. I don't like learning. It's weird. I like learning in bodybuilding, but in life, I really hated it. I was always wanted to say,
fantastic. Just keep going.
I always wanted to find my own way. I don't like being taught. I'd rather make 100 mistakes and then get it right on the 101st time, but all by myself. Right. And I was like that in life. And that's why I am, I suppose, where I am, because I've somehow landed in a good place. I don't know how. I think a lot of it's luck, think my mum's probably looking down on me from above, because it's funny, because I was out actually yesterday with my sister. She came down for the weekend to stay at mine, and we were out eating, and at one of the restaurants, they brought me the wrong burger. The fella come over and he goes, "You can have this meal for free." So I get a meal for free. So I'm like, "Oh, sweet, cool." And my sister's making a joke. She's like, "Mum's looking down on you." We go to another place to eat a few hours later, because obviously we all eat a lot. And we're standing in line, and the lady behind the till says to my sister, "Oh, you guys can have this meal for free. You've been waiting for ages." So she gets a meal for free and her husband-to-be. And then we're really thinking, shit, Mum is looking down today.
she's buying all the meals.
She's a fucking feeder. So I know, we had a really great time though. It's nice, because I don't see my sister often, but yesterday was one of those days where I don't, everything just went really well, and I think my life's been like that. Luckily, I've kind of fallen into very good places. I think it's, I know very good people, luckily, and hopefully I've been good to them, and I think in return they've been good to me and helped me out. So nothing came easy, but luckily I've met the right people along the way.
I've been in this business a long time, and you know, I think you're selling yourself a little short on why you're successful. I've seen how you treat other people, and Dusty knows this, and I know this. You know how you treat the fans at the booth, how you greet every fan, how you know, like, you're not the type of guy to ever say no to a pitcher or a fucking minute with a kid or something like that. And you know, it's good to see, you know, those guys, you know, getting where they want to go in the industry and making a living off of it.
Appreciate that. That's so nice. I think I was that guy as well. So, you know, I grew up loving bodybuilding, and I used to go to the expos, and some pros have been very kind, some haven't. And I never wanted to be like the ones that weren't very nice.
Right.
And I did soon see the ones that weren't very nice kind of faded out of, you know, the limelight, because they obviously weren't treating people right. And, you know, if you want to stick around and you want people to support you, you can't be an arsehole all the time. So, you know, that's why guys like, you know, yourselves, you know, Evan, Guy, like, you're very personable people, and you can have a laugh and you can crack a joke and you're happy to take a picture. And that's why you guys are still very much in the industry and faces of it. Like, we all know better bodybuilders than us. We all know people that are fantastic, but when they've got a shit personality, like this, you know, they're not going to be the people that the generation that are coming behind want to meet and aspire to, because you aspire not just to the bodybuilder, you aspire to the person. And if the person has no quality to them except for the fact that they can lift weights well and have a good body, then in today's age, that's not enough, because everything's about knowing. Well, because everything's different now. We know people want to know the person behind the bodybuilder. Right. You know, when Dorian was training, I don't think anyone really wanted to know who Dorian was. They just loved Dorian because he's Dorian. Yeah. But we live in a time now where people want to see what you're doing when you go home. What do you do when you're not in the gym? What do you do when you're, you know, out with your missus? What, you know, what dog do you have? What cat do you have? Like, everything now, everybody wants to know everything about you. So you have to be prepared for that.
I like to say, I know Dusty knows this as a fact, but I'm glad that this was able to be saved by my stunning personality.
I don't think you're too bad.
I mean, if I had a couple of drinks, I'd still hit on Ron, but I mean...
sorry, go ahead.
I just said a little blonde wig and you're ready to go.
And there it is.
Oh, the Brits. It's also important to note you drink the most alcohol of anyone in Europe, so maybe that's a factor. You know,
that makes the prod a little more attractive.
But
I wanted to touch on what you just brought up though, because I had one of the questions, which most of the questions that people asked me for you, James, I already knew the answer to. So I was like, I'll just type it to them. One I didn't know was, how did you get into bodybuilding?
Bodybuilding. So really, quite simply, I used to box. Liked boxing, thought I was a bit handy, thought I was tough.
Right.
Probably about 14 years old. And I noticed when I was boxing that everybody in England, all the boxers were very slim, and I didn't really like the look. I thought, God, I want to be a big boxer. I want to be like Mike Tyson. So I used to watch a lot of Mike Tyson, and I was fascinated by the size. I thought he was huge. You know, he was, for what he did, he was a big gen.
Didn't he fight around 205, 215, something like that?
So, yeah, I think so. Yeah, and the thing is, he had a 19-inch neck. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I was just like really impressed by that, and I just thought, okay, if I do boxing and I do weights, then I'll be a big boxer. So I thought just two and two goes hand in hand. So I just kind of took up a bit of weightlifting as early as I could, and I must have been about 14 years old, leisure centre, just tried to get in anywhere I could, because obviously a lot of gyms won't let you in at that age, but managed to sweetly get into this leisure centre and hit the Smith machine like a boss. When I was young, no free weights. And luckily my friend also, who used to come with me, his garage had a few weights because he had an older brother, and we all kind of aspired to be as big as his older brother, because his older brother could bench 60 kilos. And I remember like, we thought that's one 45 pound plate aside or whatever it is. And we thought that was fucking mental. We were like, that is so much weight. So the goal, obviously, as his 14-year-old, was to be able to bench 60 kilos for one. And obviously,
that's funny.
We achieved that. We achieved that at one point, and you just keep going. You keep wanting to get stronger. And my goals were to get stronger. I didn't really think about how it makes you look. I had no idea of the concept that bodybuilding would make you look aesthetic or really changed. I just knew it made you bigger. So I started training at a gym that was actually near the leisure center a year later, once I was old enough to enter, called Pink's Gym. And this was a very legendary gym in my area. It was opened in the 80s, had some great bodybuilders. I know that Bertil Fox and fellas like that had been down there and trained. Many British champions had been down there and trained. So I knew it was the place to go to learn. So I went there, learned how to train off a few, it sounds funny, not even bodybuilders, scaffolders. Because there's all scaffolders by the time all the good bodybuilders have gone by the time I joined. It was just scaffolders. Right. So I picked up how to train off these gents. And then one day, a gentleman he must have been 2 years older than me, maybe, looked fantastic, comes in the gym, egotistical as fuck, loved himself, vest on. You know, he was like a peacock coming in the middle of a group of female peacocks, puffing himself up. And I just thought, that's the guy.
You got to let everyone know what a vest is. It's a tank top.
Yeah. Sorry. Tank top.
Don't worry. I'm here for everyone.
He's translating for me. So yeah, he's in his tank top, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at this guy like I bat for the other side. I'm looking at him like, wow, damn, he looks good. And I had to approach him after, and I just said, mate, how do you look so good? Because I just thought you looked fantastic. And he just said, look, can't really explain, but if you want to learn, you can come and train with me. So started training with this gentleman. His name was Luke, still a friend of mine now. Not Luke Sando, it's another Luke.
Different peacock.
He's also a peacock. So I started training with this guy. He showed me how to train, and little did I know that he was actually getting ready for his first bodybuilding competition. So obviously being a friend, because we made friends with each other and obviously spent time together, I said, I'll come and watch the show. So I went and watched the bodybuilding show. He was a junior bodybuilder at the time, which was 21 year old or under. I watched and I just thought, this is pretty cool. This is decent. I came away from the show not convinced. I wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bodybuilder. I spent a little bit more time with him, trained with him a bit more, spent I think another year. It was until I was about 17 years old, and my physique just started to look a certain way without meaning to. And he just said, remember the show, James? He said, I think you should do well in one of those. And I said, I'll give it a go. And by the time I was 18, I was ready, did my first bodybuilding competition when I was 18. So it was kind of just like, because I watched someone do it and I just thought they looked good. I never really knew about bodybuilding. I didn't read magazines I didn't know who Ronnie Coleman or anyone was till actually after I had already got into bodybuilding.
That's kind of cool. It's backwards to most people.
It was really backwards. Because I'd never seen a magazine or anything. My bodybuilding came to me, and the passion for actual bodybuilding came after I had already kind of committed to doing it. Which was weird, because it was very backwards. I had no idea who anyone was.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Now, do you remember, like, I ask all the British guys this just because it's my era. What do you remember, like, when you realized, like, who Dorian was and what that was all about?
I was blown away because I literally had do you remember when we on the laptop we used PC you had Kazaa? Do you remember you could download things?
Yeah.
It was like LimeWire, Kazaa.
Yeah.
I think I downloaded Blood and Guts. So right. Sorry, Dorian, I didn't pay you for that. I just downloaded it.
No, what year would this have been?
He watches our show every week, so I'll make sure to give him the money.
Well, I must have downloaded that. God, probably when I was probably the year after my first show. So when I was 19, and I'm 30 now. So 11 years ago, so whatever that would be,
2008.
Who's good with maths? Yeah, 2008, maybe. So very late to the party. Very late to the party.
Yeah.
That's when I really only just started looking back at Ronnie Coleman DVDs and Branch Warren DVDs and stuff. And I was like, wow. So then the first kind of DVDs I watched were based around about 2004 or 2005. And I didn't even see Coleman in the heyday. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't see him in the 2003 till well after.
Yeah.
So I came into it a little bit late. And obviously at the time I joined the bodybuilding, Dexter was literally just winning his first, the Olympia.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my first year competing. Actually, 2008. So Dexter would have been Mr. Olympia that year.
How did you progress into progressive overload then? I mean, obviously, falling into bodybuilding, falling into that. Was it just a love for training, and you found it, or what happened?
You have to blame Jordan for that, really, because I used to train very instinctively, like. I didn't really listen to anybody and I always thought I knew best. So I trained instinctively and had pretty good success in bodybuilding. I'd won the junior national championships and I'd won the national championships as a super heavyweight all on my own with my pansy training. So I thought, I know best. I thought, yeah, I definitely know best. And it wasn't until like 2016, actually, the Jordan was like, it's about time you just did some proper progressive overload. Logged your lifts, stop fucking about, and actually keep an eye on what you're doing. And in 2016, he actually coached me as well, because I hadn't been placing very well the last times I did the nationals. I kind of fell off I was good, and then I fell off, and I was not placing. So the only real attribute that I can say that caused that was perhaps over... Oh, it wasn't ego, but overconfidence from having previously won the supers. I thought that it was just coming my way. I thought that I've won this before. The natural progression of things, I'm going to be the champ soon. I'm going to win the overall. And then Jordan from the outside could obviously see that there was holes in what I was doing and put himself forward to help me. And I finally kind of gave in and said, yes, I'll let you help me.
Mm-hmm.
So he did my actual coaching all rounds. He did everything. He did nutrition, supplementation, gear, the whole lot. And prepped me from 2016 to 17. And that was my first solid year of progressive overload. And the fantastic thing is that I went from being fifth in nationals, our nationals, to first and overall in that 1 year with the help of the progressive overload and Jordan's kind of nutritional advice. So I think it's very much as nutrition is important and obviously anabolics and all that shit, the training for me felt like it was actually the most fundamental change in my whole approach to bodybuilding because it just made my body look different and feel different. So that's when I really got into it. So I'm actually, again, you guys were doing DC and all sorts way before. And I remember hearing about it, but I just was too lazy to read a fucking book and adopt it. I remember someone having a DC ebook and I must have thought, yeah, this is sweet. I'm going to download this and read it. I downloaded it. I think I read the first page and I just put it the fucker down. I turned it off because I'm not a reader. I'm not someone that will read a whole book.
Right.
Whereas if someone who I appreciate, respect, tells me something, like if you were to say to me, James, try this, I'll sit there and listen to you 3 hours.
Right.
I'll absorb it. I'm practical in that way. So obviously when Jordan told me about progressive overload properly, it was more in conversational matters and terms. So I took it on better. I learned a lot more by hearing him speak and seeing him do it. So
I can only imagine the first year your strength must have just exploded.
It did. Because the thing is, I got strong myself even when I used to train. It's just that I was sporadic. So like I might lift incredibly heavy 1 week and then light the next. I didn't know whether I was doing pump workouts or fucking heavy workouts. I was just like going by feel and the mood, which is terrible because obviously in prep you think, oh, I'm tired, so I just do loads of fluffy shit.
Right.
And that's what I was doing. I was letting myself down, and I was not working my body hard enough because I was giving into, like, it's instinct, but it's an instinct without cause because I didn't have the intelligence or the knowledge behind me to realize that what I was feeling and thinking was actually wrong.
Right.
And then Jordan instilled in me the knowledge, which allowed me then to go forward as a bodybuilder and actually get to where I suppose I am now, really, because of his methods, which you guys, I know, are very massive advocates of the DC and stuff anyway as well. So
yeah. You know, it's funny. Even someone like yesterday at West Coast Iron, Ben Pekulski did a seminar.
Yeah.
And I loved how he started the seminar. He came out and he said, okay, everyone's here. You paid good money because you want to put on muscle. So do you want to know the best way to put on muscle? I've got two words: progressive overload.
Yeah.
But there's more to it. So here's the seminar.
Yeah.
And then the 6-hour seminar began. But it all boiled down to progressive overload.
Two words. Said, yeah.
That's essentially it.
Yeah.
But of course, there's, you know, standardizing your form and all that sort of stuff, like, you know, the factors. Yeah. But it's one of the things that Dusty and I, we didn't really mean to do it, did we, Dusty? It just sort of inadvertently happened with
every story of our lives.
Fucking guest. Like, we're trying to have, like, this, you know, lots of different bodybuilders on, and then every single one that comes on is like, progressive overload is the root. Yeah. Progressive overload. Progressive overload. Like, just every fucking person. And, you know, I guess I'm kind of proud of that. Like, when some of the young guys that watch the show or young girls that watch the show come up and they're like, my training's different because of your show.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, that's awesome. Because I remember when I switched to Dorian style training, I remember it was grade 12. I was in high school. I'd already been training for 2 years on like Lee Haney workouts and, you know, 20 sets. And I'd gotten, you know, I was like a pretty strong high school kid. But then in grade 12, I was like, you know, had become obsessed with Dorian, and I started doing the 1 or 2 working set sort of thing. And, you know, just using your warm ups to warm up and not actually burn out and all that stuff, keeping the volume lower and the intensity as high as possible, getting forced reps on my work sets. And in grade 12, I just fucking exploded. Like, cause you know, at that age too, with your hormones just cranking, it was awesome. Like I remember pressing 105, 110 pound dumbbells, a shoulder press, like in grade 12, it was fucking stupid. But when people switch over to actually putting the effort into pushing themselves upward, usually that first year is kind of a fun year, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like I say, like I went from fifth to first.
Yeah.
Like, because you're most receptive to it, obviously, when it's first kind of adopted. When you first adopt that style of training, it's going to hit you the most. It's like, wow. Yeah. So I noticed it, definitely. I definitely noticed it.
Yeah. I had a really good question here for you, James. This one was kind of like the best one I got. Okay. It's actually from, my training partner sent it to me. And he said, what's the biggest major event in your life outside of the gym that you think now is responsible for your mental strength and your ability to push yourself in the gym the way you do?
Probably when I climbed Kilimanjaro, if I'm honest. That was very...
Sorry, you kind of broke up there.
Probably when I climbed Kilimanjaro. I did that in 2015. I climbed that mountain in Africa, and that was a totally different energy than bodybuilding required. It required as much, but it was different. And it was a lot of time spent inside your own head, like bodybuilding, but a different part of my head, like a part that I hadn't actually exercised. So I think it was really important I did it, because I was exercising a part of me that if I hadn't have done that experience right now, it would be undernourished and it wouldn't be developed to the point that it is now. And I wouldn't be able to kind of go into it and use it in life. It's like there's so many parts of your personality and layers to who you are. Obviously, bodybuilding requires this much of you, and there is all this on the other side, and sometimes you neglect those sides of you. and you can get stronger and stronger and more in tune with this side, that that can actually become something that actually disappears into nothingness. And I think the fact I spent time away from what this is and I nurtured this, it made me feel more balanced all around, because I was feeding a part of me that was obviously, without realizing, in need of feeding. So that experience for me kind of gave back to me and helped me with understanding myself more.
Can you tell us a bit about climbing that mountain? For those who don't know, it's one of the highest peaks, right?
It is the highest mountain in the world for a single peak. So it's not part of a
mountain range.
Like the Alps, it's not part of a mountain range, but a single standing mountain is actually the highest on Earth. I got a certificate, actually. Let me have a look. 2 seconds. It's quite cool. I'll tell you how tall it is. It's so this is the certificate.
Oh, that's wow.
Awesome.
It's pretty cool. And that is, so it's the highest peak is 5,895 meters above sea level.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's pretty cool. Cool. So, I did that in 2015, and that just required a lot of patience, because obviously you can't get nowhere fast. You can't do it faster than you're allowed.
You can't rush. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I know a little bit about mountains. So it's not like Everest where you have to use ropes and shit. You can walk up it, right?
You can walk, but there is very steep points of it, and there are walls you have to climb.
Yeah.
There's a part called Barranco's Wall, which you have to literally climb up. So if you're not willing to do that, you ain't getting any higher. So there's some challenging parts, because the mountain itself, it's almost like levels for a Mario game. Some are really easy and smooth, and then you've got these levels that are like staggered. So the actual environment changes as you climb, because there's actually four. They have all the ecosystems on one mountain because of its height. So you start on like grass. You start in like jungle, and then you go to like alpine desert, woodland, then like snow. So it's kind of, it is like literally being in a video game from Super Mario 3 back in the day, where you go through the different kind of areas.
Oh, I know exactly that's the best metaphor ever.
that's the easiest way to explain it. But so it's weird, actually. It's very odd, because to experience those kind of different weather systems as well in one place, you're like, really? I know I'm going off on a tangent now. But
this is awesome stuff. Now, how long did it take you to do it?
I think it must have been about 6 days to get up it, and about three to get down, because you can come down faster because you don't have to climatize. Obviously, going up, you need to go up. And what you do is you go to a higher point than you're going to stay that night. So you might go up this high, but you stay this high. You spend a little bit of time higher to get used to the oxygen levels, and then you come down so it's easier, and then you sleep slightly less height than you climb that day.
How long do you spend before you go back down and go to bed? Like a couple hours or?
I think it's probably an hour or so. You just kind of climb, and then you go, okay, we're going to head to camp now. And then you keep, because you don't go up and then come down back the same way you went. You kind of go up, and then where your camp is over here. So you kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You travel to it. It's not like you go up and we've gone past the camp, let's go back down. It's more that the camp's over that way. Imagine that. Right. Like, let's go past. I want to just fucking sleep.
I mean, now. That would seem like a difficult thing to make yourself do, is go back down.
Right, please. So
six days.
Yeah, about six. I think it's 6 or 7 days. And then, three to come down or so. That down's fast, but it's tough as well. Because, you know, it's like when you walk down a steep hill and your knees are tired.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. So imagine that for 3 days.
So you're taking rations and water. Are they have any stations along the way where you can pump water or anything like that?
What it is you've got these guys with you, the guides. So these are like the natives, and they are fantastic. They are like, these guides, I kid you not, they can run from the bottom of a mountain to the top of a mountain probably in 24 hours. They are so fit and out of this world. They carry bales, like they carry bags of like food, they carry equipment for a kitchen, like all on their shoulders, and they run past you while you're slogging along going, trying to get up this mountain, and they make you look like you're so unfit, and they literally go past you, drop some stuff to the point you're headed to, come back down, get more, and go back again. Like, they are incredible. So you set up They're mad.
That's absurd.
It is absurd. Wow. Obviously, you think,
sorry.
But you set up camp at the end of every night, and basically these guys are running stuff to where you're about to set up. So basically,
can you get them to like pick you up a blizzard or something?
Well, you could. We were like, me and my friend, we were making the chef give us extra protein. we were taking other people's protein and putting it in our meals. We were quite bad, but you live. It's funny because the food is like terrible. Like you live on hot chocolates, you live on crisps, and you live on just really shit food, because obviously you just need food, anything to get you up there.
Yeah.
So you can't do that in bodybuilding at the same time.
When you said that, you know, you had to you're thinking about a lot of stuff, you're in your own head. And then you said it was 6 or 7 days. Do you remember any major things that you remember thinking about on that journey or after that journey?
Oh, lots of things. But what I really came to understand is how important it is to like stand by other people and stick together. Because there's 26 people in this group going up. You kind of section off into your own little factions, but you come to realize just how much stronger people are when they stand together. Like, it sounds cheesy, I know, and people are like, he's chatting shit. But an experience like this, not everyone's strong. Not everyone in that group could do this if they weren't with other people. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start to realize that you can take a person who really struggles, you can give them a little bit of your energy, and they can make it. And that's just beautiful. Like it was emotional. It was emotional, I have to say. Because even there'd be moments where I felt weak, but they would lend me their strength. And it's like, fuck, like this is what being a human should be about. Mm-hmm. Like, it just made me realize so many things about being a human being. And there's things that I can't really pinpoint, but I know that I've come away with, and it's made me who I am. And I think that if everyone had done an experience like that and spent time around people away from technology, away from mass crowds, away from influence, then you'd truly know who you are, and then you'd be so content. And you'd understand also how important other people are, not just yourself. It's a spiritual thing in a sense, and I'm not even a spiritual guy. I'm not like Holy Jehovah or anything like that. You know what I mean? I'm just a regular person, but I just realize the value now of other people, and also understand how complex everyone is. We always forget how we think so much, and we know so much, and we say so much, and feel so much. Every single person is capable of the same. So, you know, when you feel sad, someone else can feel just as sad. When you feel good, someone else can feel just as good. And that complexity of people, the more you can get in tune with understanding that other people can feel everything that you can, the more you kind of make an effort to make sure that everybody around you lives positively, if that makes sense. But that's kind of what it's done for me.
That absolutely makes sense. I think it's awesome, especially in our industry where it's it is so me. But as you know, it's also not, because we met on the road doing trips, and you find out quickly when someone doesn't have something, when someone needs something, how everyone who's there for themselves isn't at all. It's like, what do you need? Oh, I have that. I got that. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden it works. You know what I mean? And that's the stuff that the fans and people don't see, because all they see is 10 guys going on stage. Everybody wants first.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's true. It's a little bit, I do. That's why I do wish they saw more, and I do wish they understood more, but that's why I appreciate guys like yourselves doing shows like this to allow people to come forward, I suppose, and speak and share a little bit more insight onto the other aspects of what a bodybuilder is. Because a bodybuilder isn't just the man on stage.
For sure.
So, yeah, it's cool. It's nice that you guys have given a platform for people to do that.
Now, are you still a gamer?
Yeah, when a good game comes out, I'm fucking waiting for a good one. I'm like, when's the next good game gonna come out? I'm waiting. Like, honestly, if the right game comes out, then you can call me a gamer still. But I'm very specific and I'm very picky in what I play. I won't dedicate my time to something if I think it's less than a 10 out of 10. Do you know what I mean?
So
you're not gonna read a book if it's shit.
So what's a 10? What's a 10?
Well, like an actual game that I know that's yeah. 10, I can tell you. Let's say, do you know games? Do you guys know games?
I know a bit about them. I'm not a gamer anymore. I was like an old school guy.
Let me go retro for you, because then it helps you. But like, okay, we mentioned Super Mario 3 earlier.
Oh, yeah.
So Super Mario 3 is a 10.
Okay.
I can still play Super Mario 3 now.
That's a fucking good game.
Honestly, it's brilliant. So yeah, a game that has that much replayability, that much fun, you can play with someone else, or even not even play with someone else, but someone else can be in the room, watch it with you, and have just as much fun. That's right. What I like. I like games that you can share the experience with someone else.
Right.
They just released, I don't know if you guys ever played Resident Evil. Like, I was a massive Resident Evil fan. So
right.
You guys must have played Resident Evil.
I've played it. Yeah.
They just re-released a remaster, so a reimagining of Number 2, which was really good.
Right.
And the remake was good, and I played it with a few friends and had a fun time. So there is still good games coming out, but the funny thing is they're often reimaginings of the good games from back in the day, because you just can't beat original ideas.
Right. It's now, like the movies.
Yeah, it's like the movies. Do you ever do like the headset gaming where you're online?
Yeah, I have done Call of Duty. I used to do that. Like,
now,
I know a lot of the bodybuilders have it. Like Regan's got Call of Duty, and
yeah,
like I've had them guys saying, "Add me, let's play." But I'm shit at it, so I don't want to play against them because I'm not letting them get one up with me.
I love it. He's like, no.
No, exactly. I've got like a list of people trying to add me as friends on my PS4. And I haven't clicked like yes to any of them because I just don't want them to see the truth that I'm not that good.
It's like, I have to compete against you already. I don't want to compete against you in another form.
I'm losing twice.
I know some of you guys that game hard with the headsets and play Madden online and that sort of shit. You know, you wind up like Phil Heath was telling me how he winds up playing against like guys that are fans, like huge bodybuilding fans, right?
Yeah.
People find out what his name is. It's like, I think he's got, Phil told me his old name is still like his muscle tech name or something.
Right.
And so people realize that's him and they fucking want to play him and it just gets out of hand.
Well, they straight up Instagram you on your DM and they say, what's your PSN name, which is your tag.
Right.
So they don't care. They'll ask. They'll try and get out of you directly. Honestly.
That's awesome. I got a good one for you actually, that I think's cool. This guy asks, how do you feel bodybuilding has affected your mental health, positive and negative?
Well, that's a good question, because there's no doubt that it does affect both sides of that. Mm-hmm. There is definitely positive and there definitely is negative. Negative, I think, comes from how you cope with pressure.
Right.
I think being a professional at anything, there's a pressure to perform because you want to feel warranted at being called a professional. You want to feel that you've earned the right and that you still carry the right to be considered that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're someone that applies too much pressure to yourself, it's very easy to fall into a dark place if things don't go your way. And I have experienced it myself, I'm not going to lie. There's been moments where I've kind of lost faith or been unhappy with how things have turned out, and sometimes it can be overwhelming and you end up having arguments with loved ones or friends. And it also depends what's going on in your regular life, because if something bad maybe perhaps happens in your regular life, it's very easy for you to then amplify the negative effects of bodybuilding, which perhaps aren't as negative as you think. Because like when something happens, you know what it's like. Things aren't as bad as you think most of the time. It just depends what's going on. And if you've got a short list of bad occurrences at once, it can make everything feel like it's the end of the world.
Right.
But then again, you know, the positive side, there's so many more positives to bodybuilding that I feel it's very hard to remain in a negative mindset, because I have so much more positive that comes from doing this and being this. So when you like weigh up the scales of positive versus negative mindsets in bodybuilding, the negative is very infrequent for me, but the positive is pretty much there. Cause I love the fact like that every day you wake up and you're responsible for yourself. You know, you're responsible for your own progression. You take pride in, you know, I did a post the other day just saying how I take pride in being the guy that's controlling the wheel. And I think it teaches you so many, teaches you so much discipline and so much organization skill that those things rub off into all aspects of life. And it becomes very difficult then to feel negative because you've taken so many positive things from this. Right. And they are present every day. And they don't even have to be the bodybuilding itself. But, you know, when you go food shopping and you feel organized, you write down your food list and the amounts you need and the weight of the potatoes you need or whatever. Like, it can be something as trivial as that. But all of that has stemmed from your want in bodybuilding to be great at it.
Right.
And then it just kind of steers off into everything you do, whether it's even related to bodybuilding or not. So, I don't know. I feel positive. I just feel like it's taught me so much about myself that can be kind of taken on even when bodybuilding stops, because bodybuilding won't be forever. So even after bodybuilding, I feel like the things that you learn from this and you grow from this are still going to be present, and that is a positive thing. So how can you really look at it in a negative light? It's kind of, I'm trying to actually think of it in a negative light now. I'm trying to
force can't my find head. One.
That's what I mean.
You're 100%. You're 100% right about, you know, the carryover effect from the skills. I remember when we opened the gym and I sort of decided I wasn't going to compete anymore. I was like, you know, I'm going to like try to see how, you know, I'll put my energy into this and see what happens. Yeah. And you know how when you see a huge task ahead of you or ahead of someone else, you think, oh man, that task looks hard. It's going to be a lot of work. But then when it's something you want to do, it's not it's that giant mountain is you're like, fuck, I can climb that. Yeah. So from outside, I always saw people open gyms and I'm like, holy fuck, that looks like a brutal amount of work. But then when you decide you want to do it, the bodybuilder in you takes over and you'll work 16 hours a day for 100 days straight. You don't give a fuck. Like, and it's not even that hard. Like it's hard, but you want to do it. You're like, fuck, I'm like, you know what I mean? And yeah,
the thing is with a good bodybuilder, Ron, and as you know, because you are good bodybuilders, is that if we were to look at the challenges that we have overcome to get to this point we're even in now, if we were to look at them and dissect them and look at every individual chore that we had to do in order to get here, it would be unreal. We'd be like, fuck, I've got to eat this meal at that time on that day at this blah, 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 and I've got to take that many steps, I've got to do that many weights. It'd be unimaginable amount of work to do. You couldn't fucking face it. Whereas by being the bodybuilder and living it, somehow we have this way of just almost not seeing what's ahead of us.
Right.
We just kind of go into it and we just let it happen. And we kind of just, it's like we're on a track, you know, what's been and done is behind us and we just keep our head forward and we don't look back. And that's exactly what you're saying there. Like the way that you're perceiving the challenge of opening a gym, you kind of have this ability to switch off all the hurdles that could be and just focus on it's going to get done. And that's what I love.
Yeah. I feel like with bodybuilding for me, the eating about every 3 hours has turned my entire life into 3 hour increments. So I finish a meal and I say, what do I have to do between now and the next meal?
Okay,
the kitchen needs to be clean. This needs to be done. I go to the store. I got to be back by this time to eat that meal. So every day is 3 hours at a time, all day long. You know, somebody would be like, what are you doing tonight? I'm like, not ready yet.
Right.
Right. Exactly the same. You're efficient. I do. I finish a meal and I'm like, all right, I've got time to empty the dishwasher, hang up the clothes, change the clothes from the washing machine to the dryer machine. Then I'll probably be due to eat again. After I've eaten that time, I'll do this and that. I'll go and get a coffee, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you're just planning out, for, like you say, 3 hour increments. You are.
Bodybuilders, I always thought a bodybuilder would make a really good housewife.
Oh, absolutely.
True.
You know? So, but I never got my opportunity to really, you know, fulfill that role. So I wanted to mention something to you. We had JP on, you know, our viewers just went nuts. That episode, we just got clobbered. I still have people coming up saying that episode was just something that changed how I think. Sorry, go ahead.
People love Jordan.
They do. So I asked him who's like the most aggressive, intense guy in the gym. And he named a couple guys, but then he said, but then there's James Hollingshead and he's a nasty motherfucker.
His exact words.
His exact words. And I have had the fortune of training with you. I'm not even sure if I got one of your good days. I might have got one of your bad days, but you were everything I hoped to train with. I just expected you to be exactly how you were. That workout was awesome. That's one of my favorite episodes that I've ever done, A Mutant on a Mission. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's the King's Gym episode. That was a fucking good time. But when him for him to call you a nasty motherfucker, how do you see your mental state when you are training? Do you think you train angry? Or do you just think that that might appear so from the outside? Or do you think that that's not accurate? How do you think you are? You know what I mean?
I think it's seasonal in the sense of it depends where I'm at and what I want to achieve. If I genuinely want to be the nastiest motherfucker, like if I want to be the person who can lift the most with the best form, I will make it happen. Like I am so fucking. I just know I will. Like I will do everything every day until I am the person, and that's just it. Like and Jordan knows that. Like competing this year 5 times or whatever I did. Like that ain't because I fucking want to. That's because logically I'm thinking, let's get my face out there. Like this ain't nothing. You haven't seen James. This is just my shit physique off the back of turning pro. That's nothing. Like honestly, give me a year. If I have an off season, you're gonna be fucking afraid. Like that's how I think. Like I know it. Like I know what I'm capable of. But I also know that you have to do things sometimes in the business of bodybuilding or in the business of life. But I'm not arrogant and I'm not at all, but I'm confident that I have something wired in me different than most, probably different. Like I tell myself that I am, I tell myself I'm different than most, because if I don't believe I'm different, then why the fuck am I going to be different? Right. And Jordan's seen me, like if I get in the squat rack, and if I really want it, if I really, really want it, I will fucking blow that shit to fucking high level. I don't give a shit. But I can only muster that when I want to and when I see it fit. And I know and I've learned from perhaps more seasoned people that if I continue down that route of being like that and train like that, then I will blow something. It's still there. I still have it. And I know that it'll come back out. But I think it's taken a little bit of a back step because I've decided to step back and educate myself a little bit on other areas of me, but it is still there. And I promise you, you know, it will be back out. There will be times where I draw that in a, I don't know. It is like a rage. It is like a rage. I do get angry. I'm pissed off with the world. There's a lot of things I dislike with the world. I think there's a lot of shit people in it. And if I'm trying to do a set that's going to be unimaginably crazy and strong, then I will think about all the things in the world that need to fucking change. Because like, if I'm honest with you, it upsets me that the world, in my eyes, is a dying place. It's a place that's polluted to shit. It's a place that there's a lot of negative, put it that way. And I could really rein in on that and picture the darkest future for mankind and fucking draw something out in the gym that will just create an energy that you just can't comprehend. But I choose to try and stay away from that because when I do go into that place, if I do go into that dark place, it's so strong and so powerful that even when I leave the gym, I'll have a cloud over me for days. And it will pull me down mentally into a place that puts me in a quite a negative mood. So I try to avoid it unless it's really, really required. When I was younger, I could be there often. But now I'm an older man with more to lose. You know? Right.
I find that fascinating. And it's so my take on that is that to have the ability to go to that place is a gift. To have the ability to manage it is a skill.
For sure.
And you need to be skilled to be a champion. Right? So I think that maturity and management of that is part of what makes you, is part of what's going to make you get better.
I think so, because I know if I continued to be that way, it wouldn't make me better. And that's the truth.
Or short-term better. You might be better at a short blast, but then you might be done.
Exactly. Exactly. Because the thing is, at the end of the day, bodybuilding is far bigger than what you perform in the gym.
For sure.
The gym is a small part of the larger picture, and you need to be able to live with yourself and live with your thoughts. And if every time you enter the gym, you're using chaotic thoughts to create an energy to get a good workout, that's a lot of time in the gym, and that's a lot of time in a chaotic place. And if that if that's exercised too often, believe me, it does take a toll on you as a person, because you're going places. You're going places mentally that aren't nice.
We were talking about the same thing we said earlier with Chris and lowering the dosages. When the body is toxic, when the mind is toxic, you're in a different place. The rest of the body can't function as well. But just like the supplements, time and a place, when you need to call on that, it's there.
Yes, yes.
You use it when you need to, and you know when you don't. So it's the same thing. You know, you might ramp up some gear at the end of a prep because it's time to close the door. But that's a couple weeks. You're not talking about 52 weeks of the year. Yeah. Same thing with the training. It's a time and place. I think that as I've gotten older, I've really become understanding of energy. And yes, when you have that energy, it's nice to be able to flip the switch, but to know how far to push it. So, like, you know, I had somebody tell me literally yesterday, she was like, oh, I didn't even think that you saw me there. I'm like, oh, I see everything in the gym. Oh, you seem so focused. No, not really. Really? Once I touch the bar.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, once the bar is in my hand, it's time. And then everything goes away. But prior to that, you know, I don't, you know, I think, and that's back to that experience of being able to call on what's time. Like, I used to need to amp up to drive to the gym. And now it's like, I got to do this set. 5 seconds. Okay.
Yeah, and that's what, and I respect that, because the truth is, it's like bullets. Okay. Like a skilled sniper just needs the one bullet. You pull it through the victim, boom, target done. You don't just let off. You let off, there's going to be victims there's going to be casualties that are innocent.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing, man. You got to keep your bullet is essentially your ability to tap into that side of you, and you need to keep that accurate, and you need to let it spill outside of its projected kind of route. Because if it does, there could be consequences.
Right. Yeah. One of my favorite quotes from, remember the first generation iron was when Branch Warren says, I don't want to take that shit home to my family.
No, it's true. It's a maturity thing. Everyone, when they're young, they want to go, they want to be like, and you see it. They, all the people I knew when I was younger, they all used to work on security on the doors. They used to all do bodybuilding, and they would take their aggression from the gym to the doors with them and end up hurting people when they were working on the doors in security unnecessarily. It was spilling out into the world. Like, it was toxic. Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
So
that's why, like, I'm glad that you touched on that, because I think that's a really interesting topic. It's not even one I've discussed. Managed to bring it forward. And I think that's really interesting, that you have to realize that your energy that is inside your head is just as real as the microphone in front of me. It does exist.
That one's not plugged in, though.
The ones that's not plugged in. Well, it's plugged into my laptop. But yeah, don't get confused that these things, just because they don't have a physical body, don't have an effect.
Yeah. Sure. I can't remember who I just heard talking about this, so I don't mean to not give them credit, but they were saying that, you know, we're all so obsessed with our diets, but we forget that what we put into our head and allow ourselves to think is part of our diet. That's part of our consumption, our weekly consumption. It's not just about what goes in our mouth. It's what goes in our head. And we have to start thinking about our thoughts as part of our diets. And if you're not going to put a bag of McDonald's in while you're prepping, there's also a bag of McDonald's equivalent here that you need to make sure you're not allowing into your diet. So that was just really an interesting, I remember when I heard it, I was like, oh, I'm going to definitely steal that and pawn it off as my own quote at some point in the near future. So
I love that, because that's why, like, when I drive to the gym myself, I listen to classic FM. I listen to classical music, because all the things you're hearing, all the things you're seeing, they are being consumed just as much as the food you eat. Mm-hmm. And you have a choice. You have a choice of what you consume.
So we got you listen to Mozart, and Jordan listened into The Lion King.
He listens to some really weird shit, though.
And two of the nastiest motherfuckers on the planet.
Two of the nastiest. I can see the video now.
But the problem is, it is a bit nasty. Like, you can imagine Jordan, like, walking towards you with Lion King music. Like, that is scarier, actually, than listening to Slipknot. listening. You know what I mean? Yeah, he actually is.
To watch him deadlifting in slow motion and hear Elton John sing The Circle of Life would maybe be the best video I could possibly imagine.
I got to be honest, though. I don't want to fuck with a guy who's jamming a Lion King and lifting 900 pounds because he ain't all there.
That's some fucked up shit.
He's actually vocally saying, I have to calm myself down. That's how fucking crazy I am.
That is nuts. You've got to like golf yourself with kids' movie songs, because if you don't, you're going to explode and make the world just end.
It's just all over. It's all over because Jordan went too far on the squat rack.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, James, thanks for having you on, man. We ate up an hour of your time, no problem. We went over a little bit with you. Dusty and I seem to have a good habit of ending these shows on ridiculous images.
We're done.
So I don't know if we could top that one. But man, you've been awesome. And, you know, you were staring at your tattoo the whole episode here, 100% or nothing.
Anth Bales,
definitely. And you know, we just want to thank you, man. You know, I told everyone this was going to be a good episode because I just knew it would be. And, you know, thanks for coming through for us.
Anytime. I really appreciate it, number one. Number two, flattered that you asked. And number three, the show's awesome anyway. So even if I wasn't on it, I'd be watching it. So thanks, guys. Appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, you bet. Do you want to tell everyone, like, is there anything they need to know, like how to get you? I'm sure they're following you on IG and all that.
If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Hollingshead89. Other than that, really, you can catch me on the www.trainbyjp.com. We do, like, all our videos on there, training and kind of I have an athlete log on there where most days I'll write down what's been going on in my own bodybuilding and life. Nice. You know, it's not super detailed, but it keeps you up to date if you are interested. So if you are, check it out.
Where do you train most of the time now? The Original Kings?
So Original Kings and Muscle Works Orpington, where Luke trains, because the owner, John, is a friend of both of ours, and it's a great gym. And I like to have more than one place where I can train, just if I feel like I need to get away a little bit for a while. It's nice to have the choice. It's nice to have the choice. Sure.
I've got people asking me to come to Orpington for a Mutant on a Mission.
Sure, so. Orpington's really good. You'll love it, Ron. It's a great gym. Like, in terms of equipment, you just won't touch it.
Yeah, it's all 100% brand new, right? So it's like,
it's kept so well.
Yeah.
You could, like I said to Luke today, you can literally eat your food off the floor in there and it wouldn't even have a speck of dust on it. It's so clean. It's a lovely gym.
I love this place, Ron. You know I love this place.
Yeah. Dusty's pretty fancy. So we can, I'm sure we can get him in there for a workout.
Get yourselves over, please. And just let me know when.
Okay. Absolutely. Thanks, James. Adios, buddy.
Peace out, guys.
That was awesome.
There we go. There we go. We're still seeing his beautiful face.
It's me, probably. Sorry, guys.
Now he's famous.
I like all this stuff. I like we get him on and get him telling like the Kilimanjaro story was fantastic. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't even know that. I'm like, whoa, shit, I don't know about.
You know, this is why we are truly journalists. If you think about it, Dusty,
we get the shit. You know what makes me laugh? I have to at least scan this real quick. So I asked one question. I have 36 left.
Oh shit! Yeah,
I was like, I ain't slowing this down to ask a question. We're just gonna go.
Yeah, I got 11 here that I didn't even get to. But I mean, like, that was awesome of James to come on. And I'm really glad that this show isn't about, like, how many grams of protein you eat at meal one.
For sure. Well, I mean, like, if you look at where he took this, I'm hoping you guys are listening, are tapping in that. Think of James. Think of JP, like, what they're talking about separates them. And, oh, by the way, it was, hiked Kilimanjaro for 6 days and 3 days coming down. It's like well-rounded. And I can't help but point out, like, you know, he said words that made me laugh today. Lazy. not a chance in hell. You know what I mean? I don't think that way. Well, he thinks at such a depth that's ridiculous. I mean, well beyond his 30 years of age, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, that's just life experience and things that, I mean, shit, I would joke at the beginning, but I don't think 3 hours would have covered everything.
No, I mean, you know, we could have kept him on for 2 hours. I mean, I mean, part of me wanted to just, you know what I mean?
We'll just go until he boots us off.
But, you know, and then, yeah, but then, you know, when we get to like 95 minutes and he's like, I got to do some stuff, man.
I have to eat. It's 9 o'clock at night over here, fellas.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the temptation to get selfish with a guest like that is there.
Oh, sure.
And, but, you know, you got to leave people wanting more. And then that gives us the ability to bring them back on. You'll have more
He'll
to talk
coming
about.
Back. Because I got shit that ain't handled. Even about you viewers anymore. I'm sorry. Dusty has needs.
Yeah, and I really liked you know how he talked about managing kind of that rage side of the animal that's in there, and I totally understand. Like we've already talked about that exact same thing, but hear how he worded it. You know, it just still fascinates me, even though I lived it and experienced it myself. Mm-hmm. I still really enjoy hearing. You know, I maybe it's confirmation that I'm not the only crazy fucking person. I like, oh, see, I'm not that abnormal.
I told you, Mom. I told
you.
Yeah,
I got to send
There's a guy in England that's just as fucked as me.
No, man. It's one of the things that I'm the most thankful for about bodybuilding. You know, like I actually went for dinner with Ben last night after his seminar.
Yep.
We went. I took him to Earl's. Went to Earl's and had we had two steaks each.
Cheated on me, and you ordered double steaks.
So we order up a steak. We both order a steak and we eat it. And then the server comes by and he goes, "Can I get you anything else?" And Ben goes, "Yeah, we'll have another round." And he looks at
guys like waters.
And he looks at our waters. He looks at our waters and then he looks at us. And I was just like, "Okay." And Ben's like, "Yeah, another round." And then he goes, "Yeah, I haven't eaten like a bodybuilder in so long. I figure we'll have two steaks each."
That's fantastic. I love it. I can just imagine the way Rowdy's, we're drinking water. Did someone bring you guys a scotch? What's going on here?
But we had a conversation about just like looking back on the competitive days.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And yeah. There was when we talked all about like, you know, how you think about, man, what made me want to do that in the right. beginning? You know, like right. what made me want to be that guy? Because Ben and I kind of have similar stories about being the young kid at the gym that was just going nuts.
I remember you told me about him when he was coming in. So
yeah, because I heard stories like when he showed up at the gym in Toronto and was like just training like nuts. And everyone's like, "Who's this young kid that's going fucking crazy?" And I remember being that guy where I'm from.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's, you know, you're young, you got something to prove, you got a chip on your shoulder, you're pissed off about something, you're probably fucking pissed off at yourself for some reason, too. You know, who knows? You know, you got your teenage hormones fucking just smashing into every brain cell. Boom, boom, boom. And, yeah, you just found an outlet. And, you know, luckily it turned into something positive that, you know, formed us as people in a lot of ways. But James had a great kind of attitude about all that stuff.
I just find it interesting too, though. Like, and this goes back, and I think you know this too, back to even my hockey days and now bodybuilding. All the nastiest motherfuckers are like the nicest dudes. They're polite. They're taking care of everyone. They remove your teeth if you piss them off. and you're just like, you know, how is that guy? That guy.
Yeah.
But again, it's that same thing. It's just they just can call on it. You know what I mean? I mean, you will not find a person in this industry that has anything negative to say about James ever. Yeah. Ever, ever.
And if and I so did find just, if I did find one, I'd question.
I would just I would beat their ass, yeah.
Yeah.
sorry, I know this is your fault.
Yes.
No, but that being said, I just think it's so cool to hear that angle and he's so humble. Like I had like, I mean, I'm thinking in my head, like, look what you've done in the last year. And when you're that humble, even when he makes a comment about how just wait, you're going to be scared. You realize like, that's not arrogance. at all. It didn't even cross my mind when he was like, "Oh, it might sound arrogant." I'm like, "Not from you."
No, no.
Because you're, that's what you need, and he nailed that. Is if you don't have that, quit.
And another thing is, the guys that train like him right now are delivering improvement
all the time.
Like, those are the, like, if someone, you know, when people say, "Oh, I'm going to be way better next show," I'm like, okay, well, we'll see. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the way he trains and he's working with Chris, I'm like, oh, done deal.
Yeah, he will. And he's smart and he's got, and it's consistency. You know what I mean? And I think that's also what keeps bodybuilding alive, is because to me, when you see, this is always my complaint with like a Sean Ray, phenomenal. I see it the next year, phenomenal. See it the next year. I've seen this.
Right.
I mean, like, I love a good movie. You know, I saw Ford versus Ferrari multiple times this weekend. I'm not going to see it a third. I'm good.
Right. I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Whereas with James, like, I know for sure I'm not going to see the same movie when he comes out again. There's no two ways about it. And whether he wins or just moves up the ladder, I don't care. Because then when that show's over, I'm like, I wonder what James is going to do next.
Right.
Because it's going to get better. I mean, everything. This is trajectory in every single part of bodybuilding right now. How can you not be a fan of that and just want to watch?
It's funny. Do you remember we've kind of talked before about, like, remembering key sets from your life? Like, there's certain sets that I remember from, like, 1997.
Oh, yeah.
Because
sets, there's moments in the gym.
Right. And so one of my biggest sets of my life was when I trained with James at King's
after
Gym.
After your quad tear.
After my quad tear. And I told the story about loading up the leg press.
And being slightly afraid, but knowing it was time.
and then he puts the big green bands on and how none of the plates really match, so I couldn't tell if they were 25 kilos or – and they're just going on. And I was just like, okay, like, I guess if my fucking quad explodes on camera, it'll be a good story.
We're going to have a lot of hits on this shit.
Like, yeah, at least I'll get my million.
I don't even know how much weight that is.
At least I'll finally go viral. You know, maybe I'll make gym fails or something. But that set, because I and it wasn't just like in the moment. It was like for weeks leading up, I knew that workout was going to be a challenge, because I was like, hey, I'm training with James, and my goal was, I'm not going to pussy out of anything. Like, if he wants to squat, I'm not going to pussy out anything. Like, I'm gonna go there with the attitude that we're doing the worst possible thing with the heaviest possible weights. And so I was at least mentally ready for it. But, yeah, it was like, you know, when you're – you know how frequently you get, you know, that feeling where you're a little bit scared of a weight.
Oh,
love. And which is something that we chase, right? Because we say if you don't do something in the gym that – at least scares you a little bit, you're not training hard enough.
Yep.
And but it had been like 2 years since I'd done that because of the leg, right? So to feel that feeling again, I remember being like, oh, there you are.
Oh, sweet, for sure.
Sweet fear.
it's such a different thing. Most people hide from fear. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just told a friend that, and I could feel over text messages confusion. They were asking, I was like, oh, I just got arms today. I don't really like arms. Oh, you don't like arms? Why? I was like, because it can't end me.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, I'm very aware. Like, I don't get excited until I'm looking going, this might be the last time I ever do this.
Right. Yeah.
Right now. Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? And there's something I love about that feel when you get done and you're kind of like, all right, still here.
right. Yeah, that's exactly what that set was. It was like a moment in time. And I remember thinking, like, here's where I can make the decision to not put the two plates that he assumes we're putting on.
You know what's funny too, though, Ron, is this is why you are a bodybuilder. Like, you, not bodybuilding, you knew you were done. Like, you're done bodybuilding, but the bodybuilder isn't gone, and you had to beat that.
Right.
You had to. There's no way in hell you were going to never do that again. You might not ever do it again now because you don't need to, but you had to do it then. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're exactly right. And it boils down to even though I knew I was done competing, I didn't want to finish without that, without knowing I could go there again.
Yeah, well, you decided to be done. The sport, it wasn't decided for you now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because if you don't have it here, you're done.
Right.
Whether you want to be or not, you're done. You flipped the switch again, did it, and you're still done.
Yeah.
Because you choose to be.
Yeah, it was. I guess it was like a kind of a ceremonial way of ending on my own terms.
I agree 100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember telling James, like, that was a really important workout for me. And he, I'm sure he got it to a degree. But it looking back, like, I actually watched that episode, like, just a little while ago. I just fast-forwarded to the sets. And right. I watched, like, the leg press set. And I was like, that was a big deal. I remember the rest of that whole trip, because that was the body power trip, I think.
Yep. Yeah, you're flying.
And the rest of the whole trip, it was just like... like, oh, fuck, like, I'm back.
Right.
Like, no, here.
Yeah.
Here. Back here. I'm back here. Like, I'll do anything, you know, like, that sort of feeling. And, again, the carryover outside of the gym. It's for not sure. Even about the set of leg press that day. It's, like, just knowing that you're past that. And
yeah.
So it's just, it was awesome. So, you know, he was great that day to train with. We fucking went for it. Got a good puke scene on camera.
I just love that it was time to do that set with that man in that gym on camera. It's like, we're going to do this the biggest way possible.
Yeah, I know. It was good times.
Sorry, Ronnie Coleman wasn't available, so we got James.
Yeah, we got James. I did the best I can.
The other nasty motherfucker I could think of.
I did the best I can. Oh, so, so what's your plan for the week, Dusty?
Right now, man, it's just cranking. I mean, everything is back to normal. Like you said, the I'm back thing, that's how I feel right now. It's just awesome. Things are clicking. Training partners are on fire. Gym's cranking. I'm eating. I just demolished my Humbler record yesterday, so that was fun.
I saw your set. I do have to ask a question. Is Matt Kifora a new man now? He's wearing short shorts.
You know, we're just trying. I kind of walked in yesterday. I'm like, I'm in baggy ass pants. You're in booty shorts. This is a hell of a day.
Yeah. By the way, the new gas pants are looking sharp on you.
They're huge. I love them.
They're great.
The $400 spent. Every single pair worked. I was so stoked because you know how much cheap ass. I'm like, I think I bought pants in like 1997. So.
Now, do you still have
these in the game? I'm like, oh,
do you still have that one pair of Nike pants or Adidas pants? I can't remember. But the heels are completely eroded out of them, like they were dragging on the ground for 5 years. And there's just this crazy.
That's why I finally had to break, dude, because so I had sewn. Not me, actually. I actually had a surgeon, believe it or not, sew the ass of two of those pants back in twice. I was like. I have a surgeon fixing my Adidas pants right now.
That's hilarious.
But I finally took them out of the wash one day and I was folding them. I just looked down and I'm like, I'm not poor. I need to stop dressing like I'm fucking homeless. And
those
so I
pants.
Literally threw them away immediately with nothing to replace them with and went online. It was like, let's do this.
I threw away
four pair that were all the same. But, and I actually texted her. I'm like, there will be no more sewing my Adidas. She said, good, because I wasn't going to do it again anyways.
Yeah, that was the last time. Oh, man. Well, we've had a good, it's been a great show, Dusty. Thanks for the help with James. He was awesome.
Oh, he was fantastic, man. I can't wait. Now I'm curious to see how this one battles against our tops, because I felt like this one was nuts.
And, of course, next week we don't have a guest. It's you and me. So send your questions in, let us know. And then the week after that, we've got it's going to be a big guest.
It is. It's a very big guest. Big guest for me, especially. I've been a fan my entire career. So it's kind of
Yeah. And I think the podcast world's sort of kind of going to like,
we're melting into, I'm going to make him wear one of my hats during the interview.
Yeah. Maybe we could like fucking mail each other some merch. Okay.
Here's your West Coast Iron shirt. Get it done.
Yeah. Okay. Right, thanks, man. I'll see you again. Remember, everybody, it's just bodybuilding.